Romans chapter 12, verses 6 through 8. In our last class, we were talking about gifts. I mentioned to you that in Romans 12, Paul talks about a variety of gifts. We spent a good bit of time on prophecy, and it is a little difficult to tell. Prophecy obviously would have been a miraculous gift. It is a little difficult to tell if all the gifts are miraculous or some of the gifts are in the non-miraculous category. I'm persuaded that there is a distinction that Paul makes. He talks about some miraculous gifts and then deals with some gifts that are not miraculous. I think that would be a wise thing to do if you are going to be writing for future generations that did not have supernatural gifts. But we do certainly have both in the first century, and we have many natural gifts today. Let's go back and read Romans 12, 6 through 8 again, then we'll start off with a gift that's mentioned in terms of service. And having gifts differing according to the grace that was given to us, whether prophecy, let us prophesy, according to the proportion of our faith, we covered that, or ministry, let us give ourselves to our ministry, or he that teacheth to his teaching, or he that exhorteth to his exhorting, he that giveth, let him do it with liberality, he that ruleth with diligence, he that showeth mercy with cheerfulness. You have here a number of gifts that are listed, and then Paul says, I'm going to attach a little additional information to these gifts, and he did. Let's talk about this gift of service, or let's talk about this gift of ministry. Paul, did he specify what type of service or ministry or assistance that was? He did not. When we think about that gift, how might that be used today or expressed today? Someone says, I have the gift of service, or I want to be of service, of help. I want to aid people. How might that be done as a Christian? How do we help people? I'm not really thinking so much as far as sort of a once-in-a-lifetime incident. That obviously, I mean, if you're, anybody see the story about the fellow who went off the road and he had a dog, and the dog went out and found the troopers and kept barking at the troopers until they kind of figured out, hey, we probably should follow that. You know, they go to reach for the dog, and the dog runs down a little ways, and finally one of the cops gets it in his head. Maybe he's trying to show us something. Well, he was. And once they figured out that they needed to follow him, he took those officers to the place where his owner was and was unable to get out. Anybody see that story? Okay, I don't know if that dog's ever going to do another really good thing in his life or not, but he did a great service on that occasion, made the national news because of what he did. But we're not talking about that, again, kind of one-off, that special set of circumstances. All right, Gary, we'll see what you have to say.
Well, I mean, if people come to your house, you could be good at hospitality. If people need money, you could be one that's able to provide help monetarily a lot. If people need transported to doctor's appointments or something, and you have a lot of free time, that could be one of the services you could provide. It could be lots of different things.
Okay, I'm going to take two out of three because Paul's going to deal with money a little bit later, so we'll just put that one on hold for right now. But we think about being a host or hostess. There are some people who excel at that. There are some people that make you feel very, very comfortable. When you show up at their door, if you ask them for help, as far, and it may not be at your house. You maybe want to host an event. You've never done that kind of thing before. Maybe it's too large, or maybe it is someone who's accustomed to big events, and it's only five people. And for them, I just don't know how to deal with five people. I could deal with 500, but five, that's confusing. So could you help me out? So there are a lot of different ways as far as hospitality that we can serve. And when you think about other things which might seem in our minds to be small, someone says you need transportation, I can get you to the doctor, I can take you to the store, I can help you as far as getting to work next week. You know, you're not that far, or you're right on the way as I'm going to work, all those kinds of things. How else can we serve? Some people have that gift or that ability. Stan?
Well, I would like to continue on with what you were just saying with a question, though. In order to be a ministry, as we're talking about here, wouldn't it have to be something that a person takes on as a service, that they're going to make an effort to participate in that sort of thing whenever possible? Like the person who buys a vehicle and they're thinking, you know, if I had the right vehicle, I could take people to service. And so they decide that, yes, I will buy that type of vehicle, and I will do that on a continuing basis. And the same with hospitality. Someone who's looking for the opportunity to be hospitable, however that might be. Someone who, in the wintertime, goes up and down the street and cleans out the driveway for people. But what I'm getting at, isn't that a ministry? It's not something, oh, today I know that somebody needs to have this ride to the doctor, and I'll do it, but that's it. Or, wow, that was a bad snow we had last night. I could help the neighbor clean out this snow. But he doesn't do it on a regular basis. To me, that's not a ministry.
Okay. That's why I asked that question as far as whether or not Paul was specific. And your wife answered, so I'm going to stick with the answer she gave. He didn't specify that. So when you start looking, think about Dorcas, Acts chapter 9. It certainly sounds to me like she had a quote-unquote ministry. When Peter shows up, I mean, how many coats were the people able to bring out? I mean, they probably didn't bring them all out, but I mean, there were surely enough there where, I mean, she made one for me and one for me, and well, you know, granddaughter's not here, but one was made for her. That sounds like something that she did with great consistency. And there are people who we think about, remember Bob, he used to make the potholders each year. And the hats. I think the hats are probably more prominent than the potholders. But, you know, I don't know how many hats he made, but certainly dozens, maybe a few hundred. But that was something that, because of where he was in life and health conditions and so forth, he felt like he could do. And when the winter months came, and maybe some of the summer months, but especially when things got fairly cool, you know, he would be inside, rocking chair, and that would be something that he did on a regular basis. But there are some other people who maybe they think I'm not good at knitting and I'm not good at a lot of other things, but I am generally geared to helping people. So it may not be a specific ministry per se, but they're always looking. You know, I want to be helpful around the building. You know, walking out, I see some paper. You might have 10 people who walk by the chewing gum wrapper that's on the floor. But there are some other people, they are just geared, almost like the person who likes customer service. There are some people who want to get their hands busy and help, fix, aid, assist. And for them, that takes maybe in an average week 15 or 20 different forms. You know, they'll help somebody down the street. You know, they do one driveway. Somebody else might do all 20, but they know somebody next door that's advanced in years and maybe had a heart problem, recovering from surgery, has a broken leg, and then they go on to the next task. So I think you see both in the church, and we certainly appreciate both. And we might fall into both categories, but certainly if that is something that we have as sort of a talent, it's a great talent to use. Gary, to you.
I was going to say that also, that it could just be a variety of things, but also our widow program,
In addition to Acts chapter 9, very good. Let me add another passage in here. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 9 and 10. Paul's talking about widows. He says, "Let none be enrolled as a widow under 60 years old, having been the wife of one man, well reported of good works." Not of a specific ministry, but he says, here are some ladies that we're going to help. And he says part of the basis for helping them is that they have been involved with good works. Then he says a little bit more, if she had brought up children, if she has used hospitality to strangers, if she's washed the saints' feet, if she's relieved the afflicted, and if she diligently followed every good work. So that's why I say when you start looking at these classifications, it seems to me biblically, you have, and practically, you have two very, in some respects, distinct categories. There's also some overlap. And sometimes we're in this one, sometimes we're in this one, and sometimes there's a combination. But we can do some good things, and Paul says that's a great gift and one that we need to use if we have it. Anybody else? Don, and then we'll take Tim's hand.
Well, most people do give gifts. They don't consider it a gift. It's their nature.
Yes.
People that are taking somebody to the doctors or taking them some milk or whatever they do, they just do it because that's what I like to do. Mm-hmm. They don't say, I do this. We may not even know a lot of them that they do. They're doing it. They don't consider it a gift. To me, those are the kind of people that really do the gifts without saying, hey, you know what I did yesterday? No, I don't care what you did yesterday.
Sure. And everybody is different. I'm not faulting you if you're in this category. But have you ever been at a gathering? Or maybe hosted a gathering? Either way. And let's say it starts at 6 and it goes till 10. When 10 o'clock comes and it's time for people to start clearing out, two things generally happen. What happens if you've ever hosted a gathering? When it's sort of exit time for everybody, what happens? All right, there are some people, I mean, it's sort of, well, everybody's going, give me my coat, give me my shoes, it was fun, it was great, thanks a lot, we had a great time. Now, anything wrong with that? No, I mean, you came, you're invited, and, you know, glad that you came, and glad that you had a good time, and be safe going home. But after there's sort of the rush for the door, and this happens sometimes at the places where we meet for assemblies as well, after, let's say, 90% or 80% bail on you, they leave, you still have a few people hanging around sometimes, don't you?
What can I do to help?
Yeah. And there you have the 10 percenters. Let's just call them the 10 percenters. What can we do to help? Is there trash to be taken out? Dishes to be done? Things to be brought in? What can we do to assist you? And you know, maybe you had a lot of people and you got a lot of dishes. If you're tired, you say go home. You know, we're gonna work on it tomorrow. That can happen. But the family might say, the person might say, well, you know, we could have some trash taken out, and we've got some things to bring in, and you know, we've got some tables and chairs to take downstairs, those things. And that is great help. So not everybody is in that 10 or 15% category, but some are. And if you are on the receiving end of that, that is generally appreciated. Tim, to you.
I was just thinking about people that make regular visits to hospitals,
yeah,
to spread cheer and cheer up the patients, take their mind off of their illness or their injury for a while, and that helps them to get better faster.
Yeah, some people do have that ability. We may come back to that here in a little bit, but some people are good visitors. They may feel like, well, you know, I just went over for 5 minutes, just went over for 10 minutes, but a lot of times that is the bright spot for the person for that day, maybe several days, maybe even the week. And we can sometimes do a lot with what seems so small to us. Stan?
Well, Chad, too, or in conjunction with Don's remark, indeed there are tremendous, and there are a lot of people in this congregation that are doing it too. Every once in a while you become aware of something that somebody did that it was just by happenstance you find out about it. But that doesn't take away from the person who decides that they can do something and then purposely decide, yeah, I'm going to make it a consistent effort to do that sort of thing. And I think we need those people because there are niche efforts that often don't get taken care of,
yeah,
but there's somebody who says, ah, I can do that. And then they make up their mind that they're going to do it. Now, it's not that they're advertising to everybody that they're doing it, but they make a conscious effort to do those things.
Yeah, and that's true. And that can happen and does happen in a lot of different places. I mean, there are things when people come together for worship, you have typically a variety of people who are doing a lot of things. You may have somebody that turns on the light, maybe make sure that the building is being heated and cooled. In our case, we've got some gates that go up and down. We've got people taking care of those things. Other people say, I'll serve as far as trying to make sure we've got teachers in all the classes. A lot of different parts for a congregation that's meeting. And that's what Paul is saying here. Not specifically limited to the congregation as far as assembly times, but God's people, there are a lot of wheels in the cog, so to speak, a lot of spokes in the wheel. And we need to play some part. We may not be this spoke or that spoke, but we can serve in some capacity, and in some cases, it's this gift. Is that it? Okay, let's talk about the next gift. What do we have after this gift of service or after this gift of ministry? What's next?
Teaching.
All right. Are there some good teachers in life? Anybody ever have a good teacher? Anybody ever have a bad teacher? Anybody ever have a bunch of sort of okay teachers? I mean, you weren't great, you weren't terrible. We got through the class and I forgot about you. Maybe most teachers are in that category. But there are some teachers in life, I mean, they are just super, super gifted for whatever reason. And sometimes they are school teachers as far as the elementary grades. Maybe it's a high school teacher, maybe it's a college teacher, college professor, maybe it's a Bible class teacher, maybe it's a teacher who is working in your place of employment. Teachers are all around us. And Paul, as he talks about various gifts, he says that teaching is a gift that some people do have. Are there some people who would like to be teachers, but as hard as they try, in spite of their great desire, they are never going to make it as far as a teacher?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, it's kind of like some people who would like to be a mechanic. I'd like to repair cars, but you know, the guy, he can't hold on to a wrench and, you know, can't figure out a nut from a bolt. Well, he's probably not going to go very far as trying to work in a garage. Now, we think about the first century. Were there some teachers who had miraculous abilities?
Yes.
When you think about Jesus, Matthew chapter 10, he talks about you're going to be brought before kings and other rulers, and they're going to call you on the carpet. And you remember what Jesus said in those cases? Don't do what? Don't. You're going to be brought before people who are going to be hostile. And the natural reaction would be what? Well, okay. Are you thinking about the authorities? Oh, okay. Well, then, yeah, you would hope that didn't happen, but that could be a natural reaction. But Jesus gives them a warning.
Don't be afraid.
There you go. Don't be afraid. I gave you half the answer. Don't fear. Why not? Because he says, in that hour, when you're called on the carpet, and under normal circumstances, you might be tempted to lash out, or you might be tempted to shake and quake. What did Jesus promise?
I'll be there.
But the Holy Spirit, he was going to be there certainly, but he said the Holy Spirit is going to give you, he's going to, if you will, put into your mouth the words. Now, I don't know about you, but if I were called on to make a defense, if my life were in jeopardy as far as a court case, or someone were subjecting me possibly to severe religious persecution, and I'm thinking, well, okay, let's see, how do I defend myself? Do I want to use some Bible verses? Do I want to try to use logic? Am I going to make an emotional appeal? I don't necessarily know what's in the mind of the potential persecutor, and you know, maybe my defense is going to be just right, maybe not. But if I have God, who knows what's in the heart of that man, and how he's going to respond to every possible thing I would say, and he is giving me just the right words, I'm going to get the best possible outcome. So even if you were not the most eloquent speaker, if God is the one who is, think about Moses, he makes the claim, oh God, you know, that's not me. I'm not quite sure that that was true. Moses, based on his education, probably was a whole lot better than what he said. But anyway, that aside, when you have God allowing you to give a presentation, God's words are in your mouth, so to speak, it's probably going to go pretty well for you, or at least a whole lot better than if you were trying to stumble through it. Now, when Paul lists this gift of teaching, he talks about this over in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 8 and then 11 and 12, and then 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 29 through 31. What's interesting about that is in those two passages, those two additional references, when he talks about this teaching, he also talks about the miraculous gift of prophecy. Now, that's one of the reasons that makes me think that when we talk about the teaching here, it is teaching which was inspired by God. It is supernatural teaching. So again, I don't know that I would stake my life on that, but I do think that that is probably the strongest explanation, and we're not just dealing with a person's natural ability. But some certainly do have that natural ability. They are great communicators. Sometimes you have people who are just naturally good with kids. They can sit down with a child, and they can explain things in such a way where the child just gets it almost every single time. There are some other people who are really good as far as teachers. They can write things out. And when people see how they diagram things or the illustrations that they use, they say, that's very easy for me to follow. Other teachers have a good sense of humor. Some people can appreciate teachers who are lecturers. There are some lecturers who will just put you to sleep in about the first 2 minutes. But there are some other people who can lecture, and they can lecture well. So teachers come in all kinds of shapes and sizes. The abilities vary sometimes widely, but that can be another gift as well. Anything that you want to say before we move down from teachers? I see Stan to you, and then maybe Don.
This is a question. A phrase comes to mind, be ye not many teachers.
Yes.
What is the idea behind that thought?
Well, he says, if you continue on with what James says, he says, no, and he gives a reason for that. It's not that God doesn't want teachers or doesn't like teachers. He says, if you're a teacher, you're going to receive heavier judgment. In other words, this is probably a poor illustration, but if you're going to enter into a marriage, as a husband or wife, you have some responsibilities. But what happens if you bring children into that relationship? Would you say that now you have additional accountability in some ways? Yes, because... And I would parallel that to what we have with a Christian. If you're going to become a Christian, you have some responsibilities just as the husband and wife. But if you're going to have a child, Or, in the spiritual realm, if you're going to take on the additional responsibility of teaching, that's not wrong. But you better make sure that you're teaching the truth. And you better make sure that you're trying to do the best job that you can, because you are trying to teach for God. So it is a serious responsibility, and that's the point that he was trying to stress.
So, we're all supposed to be teachers. But there is a caution for everybody then to be...
Yeah, if you're going to wade... In a general sense, we're all teachers. But if you're going to wade into the pool, which says, I'm going to advance my teaching emphasis, I'm going to take a Bible class, I'm going to be a preacher, I'm going to be an elder, and maybe do some extra teaching, if there's going to be something that's going to amplify that part of your Christian life, then we do have that asterisk, that note of caution, where James says, you make sure that you're being careful. Let's take another illustration. All Christians should give a lot of heed, pay a lot of attention to how they're living, right? What about the elder? They're not two standards. The elders are Christians just like everybody else. But we would say the Christian, you have responsibilities to fulfill. The elder also has those same responsibilities. But if you're going to be an elder, then we're back to the marriage and the child illustration. You have, if you will, some, maybe we can use the word accountability. You have some additional accountability because you have waded into an additional pool. So it's like the person who says, I have these responsibilities at work. I have added some additional things. Therefore, my accountability has been increased. Don, did you have a point?
Thank you. Thinking about, but teaching is not gene created as much. I mean, introvert would be difficult if you get out of his introvert personality. He's going to teach, she's going to teach. Extrovert has probably stepped to up on that person to teach.
Yes.
But still, even with an extrovert, if you're talking about the Bible, you can't go out and look at the Bible and say, well, I want to start teaching the Bible without learning it. I don't want to start teaching mathematics or trigonometry or whatever. You got to learn it when you teach it. So, as opposed to getting in your car, taking somebody to the doctor, or things like that, or taking food to them, that's a step above any other gifts I can think of.
Well, there is some truth in that. I will challenge you a little bit on one point. I mean, if you're going to take somebody to the doctor, you probably had to learn how to drive. I say that somewhat facetiously, but in one sense, it's true. You do have to do some things to qualify yourself to drive. Now, you might argue that the... I understand.
Okay.
But the qualifications for driving are clearly going to, at least in most cases, be fewer. It's not going to be as involved as the process as far as trying to become a teacher of the Bible or mathematics, whatever that might be. But the point is, you want to be qualified for some things. You know, you can give somebody a ball of yarn and say, knit some hats. Well, until they kind of figure things out or have some directions or some instructions, they're going to be in the same category. They're going to say, I'm just not qualified. I mean, I might be able to tie some knots, but it's probably not going to be that effective of a hat for you. Probably won't even fit. So there are some things that we need to have sometimes as far as preliminary information. But if you're going to wade into some of those other, maybe we can think of it as pools. You got the kiddie pool, and then you think about the regular swimming pool, and just as those depths are sometimes marked in a swimming pool, you can, say, I'm going to go into deeper and deeper water, and that's God's will for us. But if you're going to do that, you need to make sure that you have spent some time preparing yourself to swim, and you know some basic tips out there in the water. And I think that's probably a good analogy for James chapter 3. If you're going to go into the deeper section of the pool, bear in mind where you are. Bear in mind that this can be a dangerous place. And it's not inherently dangerous, but just know where you are. Pay attention to your surroundings. Is that it? Okay. We are ready for the next gift after teaching. What do we have? Verse 8. We have
exhortation.
That word can be defined in some other ways. It might also be defined as exhort, comfort, console, or help. Here it seems to describe the encouragement of others. Would you, as you think about that, put that necessarily in a miraculous category? No. Could that be a miraculous gift, a supernatural gift, to have that ability? I think so. And if you were to try to put that with one of the spiritual gifts, which one might you associate that with? This might be a difficult question. What was that gift that was tied in with spirits? The anybody remember the discerning of spirits? Now, when I think about the discerning of spirits, I think about false teachers. I think about someone coming to the congregation, the false teachers that we have from among the eldership in Acts chapter 20, and being able to discern that. But if you can discern spirits, it, to me, is at least possible, and maybe even likely, that you would be able to go up and maybe have a sense that someone is, you know, people sometimes have that natural sense, don't they? Even animals. What senses do dogs sometimes have? Well, okay. I remember way back when we had a setter, I believe, and we had gone to a restaurant. Didn't eat all my food. And there was, I don't know, it was like a pot roast. Well, we knew that this dog did not like, I'm going to say onions. I mean, it liked about everything, but there was one vegetable it did not like, and I think it was onions. So I thought, well, okay, I'm going to check it out. Always been probably a little too curious. But anyway, so I mix everything up and bury the onions in that food. And then take it out. Dog's name was Lady. Here, Lady. And she used her nose or paws too long ago, I don't remember which, but she parted that out and found that onion. And then pushed that off to the side and was able to eat the rest and discard the onion. And as a young person, that was, I don't know, I guess an item of curiosity for me, fascination, to see how well she did. So they have that ability when it comes to discernment, when it comes to smell. What else?
Well, you brought up earlier about the dog that knows master was in danger, and the dog would sense that. And it also knew that maybe these people could help, too.
Yeah, there was another dog story that broke as well. Anybody see this one? A fella, apparently the rescuers knew where this guy was. It just took him several hours. I think it was like 13 hours to get to him. And this dog couldn't really, I mean, it was just a bunch of fur. You couldn't really tell much about the dog. But the dog curled up on top of the owner and sat on him, as they described it. Anybody see that story? Okay, Sherman did. And I thought, what an amazing story. The dog is able to figure out that my owner needs help. And this will apparently be useful to him, or at least this is the best that I can do, and was willing to stay coiled up on him for a dozen hours. And if it didn't save his life, it apparently helped the process. So that kind of sensitivity as well. What else do we see with dogs?
I've heard of dogs that can sense when someone's about to have a seizure, and it can cause that person to sit down or lay down on the floor so they don't get hurt when they have the seizure. They can tell when it's going to happen.
Yes, some of the assistance that dogs have given, medical people have used them in different ways. They really do some amazing things. The other example that I thought somebody might pop off with here is dogs sometimes have a very good sense of bad people. If you ever have a dog and somebody comes and you're thinking, okay, this is a stranger from the gas company or whoever it might be, our dog is no longer with us. But it was always interesting to me that if I was home, even though it was a very small dog, you know, sniff, sniff, sniff. And generally speaking, the dog was fine, but there were some cases where all of a sudden, you know, I don't trust the guy. And those instincts are very, very interesting. So if animals can have that ability, we see that sometimes with people, they have sometimes a sixth sense. It's not a miraculous thing. It's just a gift from God as far as intuition. Sometimes people describe it in that way. So it would make sense to me with the discerning of spirits that there may have been this additional sensitivity that some might have had. And that could have been helpful in a local congregation in trying to assist people. So-and-so is really having some difficult times. We need to pay attention to her, talk to her, and maybe that would not have been perceived under normal circumstances. We can still give exhortation. We can still encourage people. There are so many ways to do that. We've got cards that we can send out, phone calls, emails, a lot of little things that can be done. Several parts of the New Testament put emphasis on exhorting. We've seen that in the book of Acts 15:32, Acts 16 and verse 40. You find that Timothy In 1 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 2, Paul said, I have sent him to do some exhorting. And you might think, well, boy, you know, that sounds like almost a wasted trip for a preacher. I mean, there were surely some other people, but Paul thought that was important. And then that passage that pops up every once in a while, Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 25, forsake not the assembling of yourselves together as the custom of some is, but do what? But exhort, build one another up, strengthen one another. You know, when assemblies come, sometimes we have to discuss things that are not fun or not good, not pleasant, but our assemblies should build some people up. And there's time for that afterwards, maybe some time for that before we start the class, and hopefully during the class we feel better by being here than not. Gary?
I'm thinking of like a small, perhaps struggling congregation, and you know, they're just trying to make do with the best that they can. Every once in a while, they have a visiting preacher or just a really outgoing church member come to their congregation, teach a class, maybe teach a lesson, and just, you know, really be exciting and, like you say, build them up. That can then last that congregation for a long time until someone else can maybe come again. Maybe they're in a slump and, you know, just kind of reignite them a little bit. That's a good exhortation for them.
It is. I was going to ask a question, but Stan, I'll see what you have to say first.
Well, exhortation is a lot more complex, I think, than what appears to be on the surface. It has several aspects. To me, someone who can read between the lines, and I think that's a phrase that we use when we're not always sure just what it is, but someone is able to read between the lines and figure out what's going on, and then use that knowledge to hopefully in a positive way. Another thing is that there are people who can sit and listen to a discussion, and discussions all over, and everybody just kind of looking at each other, and that person has the ability to put that all together and come up with the proper solution, and again, hopefully in a positive way. That's just a couple of ways that I think that exhortation is complex.
Yeah, it is. It can encouragement can come in a lot of different words, ways, stimulation of thought. I've always appreciated Bible classes that are structured in such a way where people are able to interact with one another. I think that is a form of exhortation, maybe not quite what we have here as far as a point of emphasis, but people can say, you know, we had a good discussion tonight, and, you know, I maybe didn't participate, but at least I listened, and you know, I'm glad I was there and able to consider some things. Let's go back to what Gary said. I'm not calling anyone specifically, but we have some people in here who have traveled to a lot of different places, and some of the places that some of our members have traveled to have been small congregations. Maybe you've been there for a week, maybe an extended period of time. Can you recall a time that you want to share where you felt like maybe your presence helped exhort the people who were there? Anybody ever had an experience like that? Steve, to you.
Yeah, sometimes if it's such a small congregation and, you know, you go there to worship and the next thing you know, they have you leading the singing or leading the prayer and speaking and doing a lot of different things, which is not a bad thing, but so, you know, you feel like you helped them.
Yeah, it's kind of like clinging on for dear life. Come back, you know, don't leave. We like you. We need you. You're helping us. So, yeah, right. And that's ongoing exhortation. They feel strongly encouraged by that week after week. So that has happened, and that's a good thing to do. Don?
Well, we've been to several congregations as we travel, but most of the time, a lot of the times, I was the one being exhorted. I was the one that being left out. And we've gone to congregations that almost had to bat them away from talking to you and greeting you. We felt so welcome.
Yeah.
That it just set the stage for being there in worship service. And that was, I must say, that smaller congregations more so than larger congregations.
Yeah.
Somehow, the larger the congregation, that gets one another's way, or they have cliques and things like that. No, I was exhorted in many of these congregations.
That is the other side of the coin. And we've had people here, after they've been greeted well and had a chance to spend some time with us, this was the highlight of the week. You know, you're one of the friendliest bunches that we've ever been with. oftentimes we've heard those kinds of remarks, and we've had some other people who have been somewhat infrequent visitors, maybe some people who drive truck or trailer, some things, and we like coming here. I mean, we can't get here, but maybe every once or 2 years. But when we show up, this is always a huge shot in the arm. This is a big boost for us to come and have a chance to spend, you know, a small amount of time with you. So you're right, it does work both ways. I don't know if we had Tim or Palmer's, but it looked like one of you wanted to make a comment.
I was just going to say many, many, many years ago when the Columbia City Group was meeting in the Christian Science Reading Room in downtown in Columbia City, we had a family reunion twice a year, and it was in Huntington County, and so we would go and worship there on our way to the family reunion. And it was our family of five and my sister's family of four, and I think we must have had my mother with us too, or I mean, we doubled the congregation when we walked in. There were like 12 or 13 people that were worshiping there, and their face would light up, and they were just, and they asked, they said, why don't you just, we were going to LaGrange then, you know, it's equal distance from where you're living to Columbia City as it is to LaGrange.
Yeah. It's almost like a restaurant owner. He's got enough space, you know, it's a small little diner. He's got enough space for, you know, 20 people. And you bring in your party, the tour bus stops and says, we've got 50 people on the bus. It's, oh, we'll work it out, you know. Just wait a minute. We'll seat you somewhere. But it's exciting for them. So whether it is in that context, as far as summoning the world, but especially spiritually, brethren, it does cut both ways. So this is a very, very important gift. Now, in the original text, there is a little word, which it's about four letters long, which has the sense of or. In verses 6 through 8, as Paul is talking about the gifts that we've gone through carefully and slowly, he uses this word with all the gifts. But now, as we come down to the next gift, as we start with 8b, that word is not used. The question then becomes, why would Paul use this or, and then all of a sudden he stops it? Well, one answer to that question is that he may have been talking about miraculous gifts. And he perhaps used that word to indicate talking about miraculous stuff, and now he's going to switch to some things that are not miraculous. So whether it's that explanation, and I lean towards that idea, or something else, we're not sure, but there is that distinction. When Paul talks about the remaining gifts, he gets down to giving, ruling, and mercy. He does not use this word. And let's talk about the word giving for just a little bit. That's why, Gary, I said I was going to sideline you for a little bit, and we'd come back to that. Giving occurs only five times in the New Testament, at least this particular term. I think that's interesting because a lot of people, they think, well, you know, if you're a preacher, if you're a Christian, you're a church group, you talk about money, money, money. That's all that you think about. Well, that's not quite what you find in the New Testament. You have the word being used back in Luke chapter 3 and verse 11. It described the giving away of an undergarment, sharing one's income, Ephesians 4:28. Giving of a spiritual gift, that would be back in Romans chapter 1, Romans chapter 1 and verse 11, and then sharing the Christian's knowledge and fellowship, 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 8. So really, not primarily a term that is associated with money, a lot of other gifts. One source defined this as one who distributes to others. And then you have a word which helps expand that a little bit, giving how? Giving with liberality, giving with a generous spirit. People are willing to share. So here, if you want a kind of a simple definition, it would be simple, gracious giving. You're not trying to gain anything. You're not trying to show partiality. It is that gift which is given from singleness of heart, freedom from selfishness. There are no mixed motives. Now, some people are naturally inclined to be givers. Would you say that there are also some people who are naturally inclined to be takers? That's true too. Would you say that there are some people who are in the middle? They're a giver and they're a taker. If you had to make a guess, and I'm not looking for some kind of scientific poll, but if we have those three basic categories of people, givers, takers, and givers and takers in the middle, where do you think most folks are as far as the dominant?
In the middle.
Yeah. I think most people are probably in the middle, especially in America. It's, you know, I give some, but I'm also willing to take. Well, we do have some people who are definitely in the taker category, give, and some, they never want to seem to take anything. And then you do have some takers, it seems like they always want to take, and they do not give anything. So it is good to be a taker. Sometimes it's difficult to be a giver if there are no takers, but we can be people who are willing to give, and that is giving in a lot of different ways. People think, well, you're just talking about money, but no. People can be giving in terms of compliments. They can be giving in terms of lending a hand. A lot of different ways to give. And the Bible uses this word in conjunction with gifts. Anything that you want to say about gifts and giving? Gary?
This version, ESV, uses the word contributions. And that kind of makes me think of, like, when a group is having a discussion, you give your contribution to the discussion.
Sure.
It's not just, you know, it's ideas, it's sharing and helping.
Yeah, sharing, I think, is a really good word for that. I have something that I want to contribute. I have something that I want to add. And there are a lot of things that can be added that do not come down to dollars and cents. Anybody else? Betty?
I think as Christians, we need to really be willing to give, but also we need to be willing to take gifts from people.
Sure. It can, and as I said, it's difficult to be a giver if there is no taker. And there are people who would sometimes say, well, the gift is too big, it's too much, I don't have room for this. And, you know, there are some times where that's legitimate. I mean, if somebody wants to give you a whole house full of furniture, and you've already got a house full of furniture, it's okay, you know, I just don't have room for that. Could we possibly? But you don't have to just be ugly about it. You could say, I do know someone, or can we search and find someone who could put that to good use? I might be able to use a piece, or there's something there. But for the most part, that is not a gift that would be best given to me, at least at the present time. Tim, and then we'll see if there's somebody else.
I think as Americans, we have our problem people in this country, for sure, as I suspect all countries do. But I think America, the people, most of the people in America are fair people. And I don't think that being said, most of the people who are these fair people are not thinking about the intrinsic value of things. They're thinking about if they give, they think, well, I'm trying to be good enough to be a giver. But I'd like somebody somewhere to be good enough to think enough of me to give me back something, you know, not because of the something, but just because they think well enough of me to do that.
Yeah.
And I think that motivates a lot of people.
Yeah, it does. And we've gotten to the point where we have lost some things as a society. We discuss that from time to time. But in the past, when people received something, it was common. It was almost standard procedure for children to be taught you reciprocate with a thank you note. You know, you send them a note, could be typed out, but generally it was handwritten, and we're going to mail it out. Well, as time went on, we got, well, okay, texting is popular. Let's just send them a text and say thanks for the gift card. Maybe the phone calls came before that. But we have gradually moved to the point where now there's almost no thankfulness. It's almost a level of expectation and sometimes indignation. You only gave me $25 for the birthday. You know, I expected at least 50. My friends get 100. And if you really love me, it would be 250. No, really, I kid you not. There are many people who think in those terms, and it is a complete lack of appreciation. So it is a big, big problem that we have. And people are less inclined oftentimes to give if they're treated in that way. I mean, even God. Don't we have an example of that with deity? Jesus, healing, 10 people, males, very sick, and the number 9. What's the story? Yeah, we have those 10 lepers, right? How many does Jesus heal? 10. And, you know, go to the priest. Well, they start down the road. And how does the rest of the story go?
They are suddenly healed.
9 are just like the thankless kids. Don't send a thank you back in any way. Don't, hey, thanks, Jesus, for healing us. That would have taken no effort at all. Appreciate it. See you around. Only one turned around and thanked him. And that was a Samaritan. So this is not a new problem, but in America, things have definitely changed over the last 40 or so years. And it is a serious problem. Steve, I think I saw you, and then Tim, and then we'll take Stan.
Here's a phrase that I like. It's called the attitude.